back, listeners, to episode 101 of the BDU podcast. We've got everyone here, man. We've got the Jack Ned Flanders. We've got Lawrence Forth, light heavyweight, world champion, amateur. And obviously, we've got the creamy connoisseur. Welcome back, everyone. Now, if you haven't already seen, we are doing one final collection for the TV new shirts that are going out. So if you haven't already seen it and haven't inquired, make sure you drop us a DM and we will sort it out this week. This will be pretty much the final week. But I want to do a catch up with all the boys here, see what the boys have been up to. What's the plans over the next couple of weeks leading into these shows, DC?
Mate, it's going to be a very busy month coming up. I actually just booked flights for the ICN Nationals, so pretty excited for that. And I mean, kicking off the season, we did have Alyssa, who went last weekend at the IFBB showdown in Victoria, and she did exceptionally well. She placed in all of her divs, held her own as a first timer up on the stage, so immensely proud of her. I've got a competitor at the NBA show in 2 weeks' time, not this weekend, the weekend after, and then it's basically after that, almost back to back shows of the season. So, man, I'm excited for things to commence. It's kind of like that, you know, in between shows, it almost feels very slow and very like, it's almost like too quiet, right? And then the season kicks around and all of a sudden it's absolutely hectic. But yeah, excited for things to kick off. Training for me, mate, has been a really good spot. I'm training back at North Lakes now. And it's kind of like home. I used to train there for my last contest prep. So it's a very familiar space to me. But yeah, mate, things are good. I'm excited for this coming week.
What's the plan though for like over the next couple of weeks leading into the shows? Are you going to put the training on the back foot a little bit, maneuver around some training sessions?
For me, well, I mean, I only train one day on the weekend, right? So like the Saturday is quite easy to move to the Friday and just move my rest day around. So, I mean, I usually take a rest day on a Wednesday, but if I, you know, have back-to-back shows across the Saturday and the Sunday, it just means moving the rest day around and just taking those days as rest. So it's not really a big deal. I'm certainly not going to skip out on training just to, you know, because it's a busy time of year. So, you know, it's something that I guess we wouldn't encourage our athletes to take that session off completely. It's feasible just to move a rest day around.
Yeah, no, 100%. What about you, Jack? What are you up to?
Yeah, just the same old stuff, continuing to get in my groove and enjoying training at the new gym, Fitness Cartel Oxley, getting used to the kit there. I think I've run almost a full mesocycle now. I'm deloading this week and definitely quite a welcome deload. So chosen just to take a few days off back to back, so Monday to Wednesday, and then I'll head in tomorrow, see how I'm feeling, and either just recommence normal training or just like with some being slightly conservative, or just still run a couple more deload sessions. But chose to run the full complete rest days just because this week was quite a bit busier with work, so made sense to make the most of the extra time from deloading. And yeah, usually that approach works reasonably well for me. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, the I guess the phase I'm in at the moment is essentially improvement season phase. And just aiming to get as strong as possible, enjoying some of the Panada kit at Fitness Cartel, especially for legs. And yeah, not much else to say, really. Looking forward to the show season. I've got a client doing men's physique actually this weekend in South Australia. And he'll also be doing the WMBF show and the ICN Queensland show. And then I've got a bodybuilder doing the ICN Queensland show as well. So I'll be at all the Brisbane shows except the Sunny Coast one.
Yeah, very nice.
How do you find the plate-loaded pendulum? I know it's the Panada has like a pendulum. It's not quite a full pendulum squat.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a leverage-based based squat pattern. I've used it once before. It was at the World Gym in Moore Park in Sydney. How do you find that? It's quite a heavy piece, right?
It's maybe we use different pieces because like I wouldn't say this is that heavy. I would say on the Gym 80 pendulum, for example, I could do, I don't know, maybe four and a half plates. That was a while ago. On this one, I can do like three plates a side, so six plates. So I think it's more stable than a traditional pendulum like the Watson or the Gym 80. And that allows you to load on a little bit more. You can also get really good knee flexion because the foot pad is adjustable, so you can bring it forward or back. And I... yeah, I personally really like it. Yeah, I agree. It's not quite like a traditional pendulum because of how supported it is. And I do find that they've put on quite a heavy counterweight as well.
Does it feel good though, like on your back and everything?
Yeah, it feels really good. You can also lean quite far forward, which I find helps with the bracing as well. So you don't have to lean back. So your rib cage is in a better position when you can lean slightly forward. It helps you with bracing.
Is there a lot
I think back on when I used it, I mean, it was the fourth exercise into that day. So maybe it felt
now they're coming out. What are you doing? I think I did 10 by 10 back squats or something prior to diving into it.
And a run.
I think I had like 5 aside or something like that. Like it kind of felt heavy. So you know what I mean?
Sounds about right.
Is there a bunch of techno gym kit like over there as well, Jack? I didn't hear you saying that you were, you know, running that. I heard the Panada, but what about the techno gym, you know?
I mean, look, if you just miscount your reps, it's got that screen up there, it's counting it for you, man.
All right, what about you, fourth place? Light heavyweight world champ. Come on, give it.
Thank you. A bit of respect.
What are we now? What, 20 weeks pro show?
Oh, I don't know, man. I'd have to check Evan Godby's story to know how many weeks post Worlds I am, because my man is consistent on throwing up that bicep with how many weeks he is. But yeah, I think it would be something along those lines.
I think it's 20
or 20 more, to be honest. Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm good, mate. I think the gaining phase is going very well. I feel like my body weight throughout the week is generally a little bit more topsy-turvy than most, but then the averages sort of mellow out at a pretty good point. On the training front, the week before last was actually pretty average for, I don't know, probably a combination of reasons. Like I'm house sitting at the moment for some people, so sleep hasn't quite been, you know, it's taken a while to sort of get comfortable and sleeping like a new environment and that sort of thing. So sleep wasn't as good for a couple of weeks, and then I was probably just hanging on to a few exercises for a bit long that were starting to cause a few niggles. So I swapped out a couple of things, restructured a few of the sessions, and I found that it's a good happy medium at the moment, because I think, to be honest, like on my leg days, I probably let the volume get a little bit high, because even the last 2 weeks, like for today's leg day, I've actually dropped one exercise. But you know, the pump, the stimulus, and then, you know, the progressions have all been a lot better, and I'm also not getting the knee pain to go with it. So I think, yeah, every now and again, I think that the default is wanting to do more. So I think we probably do need to pull ourselves up and just sort of peel things back every so often.
Yeah, 100%. I'm already ahead of you on that. Like, I peeled back the leg days heavily going into about last year. So like, my legs are growing like wildfire. How you feeling post-show, like diet-wise now, though? Everything pretty much riddled off? No lingering hunger or anything still?
No, yeah. I think it's interesting. Hey, like, for as much as the more experienced you become post-show, things do get easier, it still is one of those things where it's like, it really is a long time before you stop doing like a few of the kind of weird things around food, or before you're not like looking
baking
forward
bread.
To... Yeah, like, you know, dedicating hours to making sourdough bread. And mate, the second one has been a debacle, to be honest. Like, it was going so well. The starter was getting viscous and like bubbly, like a sourdough starter should. And then one day it just stopped responding. So I've just like forgotten about it, put it in the
needs
fridge.
More volume.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I could probably just give it to Jack. He could put it in a creamy or something like that. That viscosity, I can see his eyes lit up when I said that word.
I've never seen a hollow sourdough, but I'm always excited to see it.
Oh, dear.
Have you guys seen that sourdough?
They're like
guy
a cream bun.
That sourdough guy on IG who like will make all these different sourdough combos.
I don't know, but you might need to send it to Lawrence so you can get
please send me that information.
We'll do
sourdough walkthrough.
But I do digress. It is interesting just to see like how long it does take those things. Because, you know, like energy wise, even within a couple of weeks of just getting more food in, like I was feeling really, really good. And then, you know, in terms of like general fatigue and training performance, all of those things came back online pretty quickly. But you know, it still probably takes a good couple months after all of those things are done for, I think, you almost to like fully psychologically recover from prep, where you're no longer doing some of these like weird things. But I would say that like all of that is well and truly behind us now, which is good. And I think I'm in a nice patch, where, you know, the balance between social life and training and recovery and work and all of that is going pretty well. So yeah, very happy at the moment, mate. Very happy.
Yeah, a couple of things there, like the social life and the work on the back burner, and now put that training, that's at the top of the pedestal. I don't want to hear about the other stuff. That get locked in.
It's time to lock in. I'd be probably about sort of 150 weeks out at this stage. So, I mean, it's now or never, really.
I mean, the fact that you don't even know how many weeks out you are.
Well, there you go. I'm still mustering up the courage to tell Gemma that I'm in prep now. But yeah, we'll see how it goes tonight.
I've started the diet early. I don't know how Jack can talk. Like, you know, counting these weeks out of prep. We're at 1,453 for Jack.
Well, yeah, I know. I still got the number down pat, though. That's the thing.
24 years out.
He is locked in, to be fair. Yeah. Have you guys seen that guy who's like on the Instagram reels? I know you've seen him, D.Y. He's like the accountant or something. And he's always like, right, I'm obsessed with this guy. And the only thing better than his videos is the comments. Mm. Like, his comment section is out of control. And like the last couple of days, he's like, he's gotten sick. And oh, man, it's just the discourse is unbelievable.
Is he the guy where the comments are like Excel spreadsheet king, like last
year? Yeah.
Bad day to be an Excel spreadsheet.
Second quarter shaking in its boots. Unreal. He's hilarious, that bloke.
Oh, mate, locked in.
How are you going, DY? How are things on your end?
Yeah, man, I'm good. So I did my first full training block up at Fitness Cartel. That went really well. Had to try and kind of find a couple of movements that, you know, there was obviously you got a very large array of exercises at Powerhouse. So swapping from there, I had to fill the gaps with some exercises. So I found my groove now. Got these new handles. I think you might have seen them on my story, the MyFlex grips. You can kind of put them on all bars and like all the hammer strength handles and the actual handles. So like, you can actually strap into them. You can change around some of the grips and they actually feel really good. The only thing is sometimes it does limit the range of motion. So you just need to get a little bit of a foam block to allow for a little bit more range of motion. But overall, man, training's really good. I kind of found my groove now at Fitness Cartel. So training's really good. Running the deload this week and I will be running a mini cut after I finish this next training block. So I want to get through the next comp season. I'm actually going to pull my training back from 6 days as well now to five, so that way it frees up an extra day on that weekend, and I'll pretty much shift around a rest day on that weekend depending on what day the shows are on. I'll pretty much run this for another 6 weeks, and then after that be the first mini cut, which I think would roughly be about 30 weeks of gaining before I run a dieting phase, which I'm excited to do because it's been a very long time since I've done anything probably over a 5 to 6 week dieting phase. So I'll probably extend it a little bit and see how we go.
And I suppose the number 100 is very much in our line of sight at the moment. Last week, 100 episodes. Big shout out to AJ for coming on. Jack has hit 100 creamies over the weekend. And a little birdie told me that you've hit 100 kilos. Now, we saw a picture of it on a digital scale, but you could have been holding Camellia at the same time. We don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I did hit 100 for one day. I was like, yeah, see what I weigh. And I weighed in like 100.1. But checking day to day, weighed in again, 98.7. So, you know, it's just not on.
It doesn't count when you have two cheesecakes that day as well.
I actually believe this was the day before I had the two cheesecakes. So I think it was the cheesecakes. I probably ate two cheesecakes and ended up falling under my calories. That was probably the issue. Yeah. And the next thing, you know, I'm 1 kilo down and then it's all over. So I've told Joe, pack it up, wrap it up. I said, pushing it back to 200 weeks. So another 2 years down the line and 4 years down the line and, you know, we'll be on.
I think that was before you took a shit, right? Because then after you were like 96.
Yeah. And that's when that solidified the wrap up. I said, Joe, I'm eating all this food and I do one shit and I'm 2 kilos down. Like it's not happening. I'm doing three shits a day at this point on these 5,000 calories. Like we're pretty much a churning machine. Yeah. It's not looking good. So I'm losing weight quicker than I'm putting it on.
I mean, IFBB has three seasons now. So they got you covered if you need to push the season back.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll just put on my story that it's all planned, you know. Yeah. Really, I've just shit the bed, quite literally. but in all seriousness, everything's going good. I'm going to get through this this run of shows. I think I've got 6 or 7 shows back to back, so it's going to be a decent run. 2 IFBB, then ICN, WMBF, ICN, ICN. So it's going to be a big run. So I'm excited for it. It's going to be a very big season, I think, for all of us. So, All right, let's dive into some of these Q&A questions. We got a decent amount this week because there's been about 3 stories worth from over the other couple of weeks when we've had the special guests. Now, which one do you prefer, Lawrence? Lifting wraps or actual grips? What's the preference? Do you like the Versa grips, or do you use like a figure eight or like a standard wrist wrap?
I'm a little bit fussy, to be honest. I use a combination. So for deadlifts, it'll always be figure eights, but I don't really have a good explanation.
What about RDLs, just quickly? Do you use figure eights for RDLs? Or?
Generally for RDLs, I'll put the figure eights to the side next to my phone with 2 zeros typed in so I can quickly hit the third once I've done my hamstring and call the ambulance. That's my setup for RDLs. Yeah.
That's fair.
And my psychologist on speed dial as well.
I'm actually just like the thumb grip.
I thought your psychologist was actually on the call.
Yeah. It's DY.
It's going poorly. I'm sitting here. What are you fearing at the moment, Lawrence? What are you feeling in your mind as you're about to go on this audio? It's trauma. I don't even know what to think anymore. I can't sleep. No, Lawrence, it's all in your mind, mate. Get on the bar, strap yourself in. Got
to
coach.
Which is ironically how a lot of my physio consults go, actually. That's funny. But yeah, I would say that, I don't know if you boys can relate to this, but some of the, like, especially rowing type movements with the figure eight, it just doesn't feel like your grip is like one with the machine. So you almost want to feel like, you know, you're really stuck to it. So most machine based rows, I'll go with the Versa grip because I just feel like the grip is slightly better. Like it's almost a bit firmer in my hand. And also it is just a bit easier. So yeah.
But you still talking about the back movement?
At this stage, yes. Well, we're 10 minutes in and we're always already completely derailed.
Hey, this is my episode, all right? It'll be derailed multiple times.
Figure eight for deadlifts and then Versa grips for most other things.
Well, you, Jack, you're a figure eight man, aren't you? Fuck the Versas.
No, neither. I'm just use standard straps.
I think, Jack, you and I use the same Iron Mions lifting strap, right? The blue one?
Yeah, I was up until like a month ago when I left them at Genesis Windsor and I never went back to retrieve them. So,
My old hub, mate. What are you doing over there?
I was getting in a session just to try it out because I was moving location, but I mean, it didn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. It was basically a retirement home in there.
But it does have some Nautilus kit if they've still got the exact same pieces of what they had 15 years ago.
Yeah. I mean,
was the gym. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I did my first posing workshop there when I was like 16. Yeah, and I remember I met Jason and I think I met Sean there as well. And yeah, I remember it looking like a pretty good gym.
Yeah.
I think after, being at Riggs and being at like training with you a couple of times at Powerhouse, it doesn't, especially the vibe, doesn't quite compare.
Yeah.
They've got Jack a lot of off brand
stuff. Cables work. Can't have that. I got to get out of here.
Also, the plate on the foot leg press, I don't know if you use the leg press like or if they've replaced them, but it was so bad. They used to have a lot of really good Nautilus kit. Like they used to have like the incline plate loaded chest press, like the normal flat press. They also had like a pivot leg press. They also had like that single arm plate loaded row. So they literally had like the whole entire, but they just removed all of it. And then they just got like off-brand machines that look new. And then they colored, so they just got rid of like the most prime Nautilus kit and just said, out with that fucking fake hammer strength. Let's get it.
Yeah. I mean, I've just always used the straps and Iron Mind is definitely my recommendation. I'm using some other straps now, but once they break, which they inevitably will, I'll go back to Iron Mind.
What about you, DC? Figure eight? No, you use the same ones.
No, I can't say I've ever used a figure eight strap before. I use just traditional lifting straps for more like deadlift and RDL based variants, and then for my row exercises I use the Versa grips. Kind of similar description for you, Lawrence. Like I find with the Versa grips, you feel just like one complete unit. Like you're just completely locked into that handle as you go into the row variant. But I feel like with the lifting straps, like in between repetitions and like with deadlifts, like almost like upon the reset, I feel like you can sort of let go a little bit upon the weight and then reacquaint yourself in that locked in position prior to the next repetition. Whereas with Versa grips, you can't really lose your grip positioning. You can't loosen your grip or else the grip will literally like let go, right? So I find just having some versatility between which straps are used for what or which grips are used for what is nicer. And I find Versa grips just really nice for most row exercises and like side raises and things like that as well.
Mm. Also just insanely durable. Like I think I've had that same pair for probably 5 years plus and they're still fine.
Aren't they like $100 though? You'd fucking want them to be.
Well, no, mate, you know, $100. Like,
maybe we've got the figure eight wrist straps, you got $10 on eBay, you know, like you can get 10 pairs of them. I could put them all around every finger.
That's it. When you're making the amount of money that the four of us make, $100 is a drop in the ocean. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't even notice it.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways, so, I just ordered 5 of them. I'll let you know how they go.
Just one for every color of every day.
Yeah, I'll mix and match. Don't get me wrong there. I'll even use them on leg day. They haven't left the packet. But anyways. Do you think you guys could do a full prep off only eating one fast food chain? So do you reckon you could do a prep of like a fast food chain, but not like grilled on this, like KFC, McDonald's? Jack, do you reckon you could do it? Considering you never even eat takeaway?
Yeah, I could do it.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, they've got salad options and I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think the calories and the macros would be the hard part. I think just the quality of the food would be absolute crap. So... Mm. You'd probably end up getting, I don't know, some sort of nutrient deficiency throughout. I mean, they probably fortify everything, to be fair. So it just wouldn't be overly satisfying to do. I'd rather use like a chain like Fishbowl or something, which is, I guess, technically fast food, but the food quality is actually decent.
Mm,
or GYG.
Yeah. All right, but now I'm going
to say that as well, GYG or Mad Max or something like that might be an okay solution.
Yeah, I was going to ask what this was going to be the second part. What would you pick?
Yeah, I'd probably go with Fishbowl.
Fishbowl.
Yeah. Mm. You ever had Fishbowl? Yeah.
No, I haven't. It's far too healthy for me. what about you, DC?
I'd probably agree with Jack, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do it. And to be honest, it wouldn't faze me. It could be either Guzman, KFC, like, you know. I love all of the meat.
Basically
equally.
What you do regardless. So wouldn't
No, I did my last prep. Like, you know, what was it? Prep number 2. I was eating KFC every week. You know, the double refeed. Let me cook. What about you, Lawrence?
So are we not counting grilled? Does grilled
nah,
not count?
Grilled doesn't count. That's not fast food.
I think Subway would be pretty easy to do as well. Especially because those are very separate ingredients. Like you could probably eyeball it all quite well. Subway or GYG.
Your show day nutrition just with this like foot long sub.
What do you mean? He'd be eating the cookies. This man switched on. He's ahead of the
cookie,
game.
That's a new thing, I think.
Mm. Yeah. And
I'll tell you what,
mate,
though.
He's screaming at the 17 year old, being like, "It's too much chicken. That's not enough chicken."
Yeah. But the thing is, you'd get really sick of the sub, you know? Like, at least with McDonald's, you get to pick a variety of stuff.
Well, DY, I was actually going to mention this to you, and I would take a video, but it would require me using my phone while driving, which is an offense. Mm. And
last
I was,
thing I'm going to do is break the law.
That's exactly right. None of us on this call would do that in any way, shape, or form. But I was driving. There's a new like shopping center getting built literally up the road from me, and I was sort of like looking at the shape of this building. I was like, oh, yeah, that's good. Like another petrol station going in, and then they erected the Colonel on the bucket, baby. So we're pushing the prep back even further. Now that there's a KFC up the road, all bets are off.
Anyways, I'm taking over your prep and we're actually scheduling that in weekly. So you don't need to worry about that at all. It will be included.
That's perfect.
So you can stay in prep, actually. Don't tell Gemma.
Yeah, don't tell her.
Yeah. All right. One tip you wish you knew when you were first starting out on your bodybuilding journey. Jack, I'll put you on the spot first. I can see you rubbing your eyes. I knew you were prepared for this question too.
So one thing that I wish I knew when starting.
When you start your bodybuilding journey.
Is that like bodybuilding in general or prep specifically or?
Bodybuilding in general.
When it comes to training, prioritize execution first above anything else, and then worry about intensity later. I think that depends on the individual to some extent, like, because I've never really struggled with training with good intensity. But that's, for me personally, that's what I'd tell myself if I had to go back to where I was 10 years ago.
Well, you, DC?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. I think back to when I first started to get into lifting, and probably within the first couple of years of training, I ran some very high volume programs. Things like Smolov, Smolov Junior, for you guys and girls that may know that programming style. Yeah, these volumes were immensely high. And to be fair, I feel like I responded quite well to them, but I did get my fair share of injuries along the way. And I feel like those could have been circumvented if I had a more educated and informed opinion about volume and how it plays its role in hypertrophy-based training. So I wasn't aware of kind of, you know, a volume ceiling based on recoverability. It was almost like just more volume is better. And I think based on literature, I mean, volume is substantial and important for, you know, hypertrophy. But I think my early understanding of volume was just, I need to be putting in as much volume as possible, tremendous amounts of junk volume, and just not as effective training, really.
I think a lot of people do start out, because it was quite big probably back when you started out, like the high volume training. Like everyone was talking about high volume training. And you even still see it, like a lot of people doing like 4 or 5 sets on absolutely every single movement. And a majority of the time when you're a beginner, you actually respond quite nicely to it, because you go from literally doing hardly anything, and the next thing you know, you're doing so much volume, you grow like a weed. But like you said, after a while, and now you start racking up some of the weights and you've been training for a while, the injuries start to accrue at a very, very large rate. And yeah, I think I learned a lot the same way, because I used to do some very high volume training too. What about you, Lawrence?
I'd probably say I was like the inverse of Jack, to be honest. I think I probably could have trained a lot harder and like not been so pedantic about like making every exercise look absolutely perfect and have, you know, every movement has to look, you know, in a specific way before I can even progress. Like there would have been so many weeks where I would have done the same weight again and again and again, just because I thought I somehow needed to like slow the eccentric more or use more range of motion or something like that. So like Jack said, I think there's a balancing act, because I think for myself, who my range was not an issue or my form was very good, like someone actually saying, hey, dude, like you could probably push a lot harder here, that probably would have benefited me more in those early days.
I think for myself, a lot of it was like a lot of bro exercises. Like I used to follow like a lot of YouTubers, and that was like kind of like a big motivating factor for me. Like, you know, you look at some of these guys, you're like, holy shit, these guys are training. They look absolutely wicked, and not really understanding like a good level of biomechanics. So like these guys are doing like plate presses and like, you know, those dumbbell upright chest flies. And the next thing you know, you fast forward 10 years and you're like, holy shit, that would have literally netted me not a single gain. So, you know, some of these like exercises like that you see like some of these influencers doing, some of the time I still see them in the gym every single day, nearly just like absolute horseshit exercises that just don't do absolutely anything. And a majority of it's built from like the bread and butter stuff, the heavy lifting.
Yeah. Can we all go around the table quickly and all name just like what is your absolute favorite, like just YouTube exercise, but it actually does literally nothing? I reckon my favorite is the drive in the truck. You know, you've got the 20 kilo or the 10 kilo
front raise.
And you're just like, but not even the raise, just turning it. It's just like a straight up isometric for the deltoid.
Yeah,
front
but when
delt and like a little bit of rotator cuff movement, perfect.
But when you rotate it, you actually squeeze that front delt as you're rotating it around. So
yeah,
it works tremendously. Point. Yeah, I think mine would have to be like the one clue is when I like see someone, I'm like, this guy has no idea what he's doing. Is like either the plate press or like when they're doing the dumbbell standing like chest fly. As soon as I see that, like they could have a good routine everywhere else. As soon as I see that, I'm like, oh, yeah, all right, sick. He has no idea what he's doing. So that's one.
The one for me is when they like do a chest fly on the machine and then they'll grab a plate and then do a press. I think that's basically what you said, but they'll do a press with the plate thinking that it's like contracting their chest, but it's really just their delts.
More kind of like inner chest kind of thing.
Yeah. Same with like the standing rotator cuff with the dumbbells and like they're just, it's just front delt.
Yeah. Well, this for me, this isn't actually strength train related, but if someone's like walking on an incline bench and they're holding onto the handles, to me, that's kind of wild. Like they will have the incline on the bench literally like maxed out.
What bench?
But they'll be holding to the machine.
I think you mean treadmill. Yeah, I was like, walking on the incline bench.
Same with the Stairmaster as well. Yeah.
I mean, So. So I think that's wild. I mean, the benefit of having it on incline is that you have to walk up the incline, right? not just hold onto it and hang off it.
An honorable mention has to be the V-bar in the Smith machine, though. Like, that is a belter, right? It's like, mate, just go get some dumbbells or a barbell or like any, literally any other machine press or pec deck. Like, I mean, it looks fancy, and I'm not going to lie, like 16-year-old me would have done it before, but also what a ball ache to set up. And most Smith machines are
on an angle.
Anyway, so you're just like eating off to what, like what? Do you have to do like equal, even number of sets around in it like these? Yeah,
you're going to have one very good inner pec on one side, that's for sure. Like your left inner pec filled out quite nicely. The other one, absolutely nothing to it. All right. Next one here. Do you think posing coaches are necessary for a prep, DC?
Look, I think it can be very helpful. I definitely recommend that a lot of my athletes who maybe not necessarily struggle with the poaching with the posing side of things, but want to really ensure that they're ticking all those boxes in learning their posing inside and out, that they align themselves with a posing coach. I will spend time in check-ins, you know, discussing the posing side of things and bringing up check-in photos. And I even jump up in my check-in videos and describe positioning, etc. But I do think that some additional time spent with a posing coach can be, you know, beneficial. And whether that's through,
in check-ins or?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, look, do you even take coaching seriously at that point or?
Yeah,
exactly.
So on this topic,
I think it's important. What do you boys think? Like, if you want to be a master of your craft, you're going to need to spend time practicing the skill, and posing coaching can be a tremendous way to ensure that when you're up on stage, you are looking incredible and it separates you from someone that's next to you.
I think now with the prevalence of like the posing coaching coming about, I really think, especially for female divisions, the guys, especially with like the ICN, can probably get away with it a little bit less, but like nearly everyone that's at a very, very high level now has a posing coach. Like there is, in my opinion, no way you're doing IFBB now without having a posing coach. I think it's a necessity, and the necessity, you pretty much need to be posing from 30 weeks out minimum. And even the same with like the ICN, like, you know, you go up and you're doing it all yourself, or maybe with the help of these classes and you didn't actually have a posing coach. I think you're really shooting yourself in the foot when you get up on stage and someone's sitting next to you that's had a perfectly crisp routine and you're sitting there that have only done classes, because there's only so much you can learn in a 1-on-30 setting, or even from your coach, like, you know. And I just think, like I said, with the prevalence of these professional posing coaches that have worked with hundreds, if not thousands, of athletes that have won so many titles, why would you not want to go to someone that knows the craft, especially when you're putting so much time and effort into the actual posing? And even you look at like all the IFBB pros, especially like the men's in that setting, all of them are getting posing coaching. They're all getting helped by someone. So I think currently, right now, if you had asked me this 5 years ago, when I was first starting out, no one had posing coaching. So I would say it wouldn't be a necessity. But this time, currently, right now, with over 50% of probably the industry either has a good coach and a good posing coach, I think if you're not going into a show with at least one of those, both of those in check, I think you're probably setting yourself up to probably not do as well as what you could.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also
any you'd recommend, DY? This is a paid ad, mate. You're not fooling anyone here.
Yeah, well, shut my mouth. All right, wrap it up here. What do you think, Jack?
No, I'd agree. I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Like, it's not black and white in that sense. But I think if you looked at 100 competitors who had posing coaches and 100 who didn't, like, the competitors with the posing coaches would have better posing for sure. And I, especially for the more complex divisions where more complex posing is required, like classic physique or IFBB bikini. And I think with the posing classes or workshops, like they're great for practice and they're great to practice alongside other competitors. But I think, and I think the majority of the time to a certain threshold, they are very helpful with learning posing, but there begins to be a point where you just need more one-on-one feedback. And due to all the people there, like some of the feedback and critiques are very contrasting. Like you'll have three people say three different things, which once you get to like 15 or 10 weeks out, like you really don't want that added stress when trying to learn posing or refine something.
100%.
Absolutely. I think it's also good from the position of like accountability. Like I think, especially, I mean, a couple of episodes back, we talked about some of the most challenging aspects of a contest prep, and obviously fatigue is a huge component of that. And I do think that for athletes that are experiencing a lot of fatigue towards the tail end of prep, it's easy to sort of put the posing side of things on like the back burner and just not practice due to fatigue. So I think when you have a scheduled, session in every week or every fortnight as it pertains to the posing side of things, it's forcing you to practice. You know, it's an accountability point. So I think that can be helpful as well.
I think one of the biggest things is I've noticed is like now with the prevalence of the posing coaches, just that my clients choose to go to them because obviously they want to go to a professional. And I noticed the posing is like way better than what it would be without, especially like when you compare it to a couple of years ago. So, and also having a professional take care of it, I think just helps tremendously, just like from what I've seen personally with the clients.
Completely agree. And now that we're through that paid advertisement for Post by Camellia, we'll go to another paid advertisement for Power Subs. And boys, look, we are nothing except honest on this show. And I'll be honest, I got a whey flavor. It was a risk, let's be honest. It was like cinnamon toast or something like that. And not my favorite in the cream of rice. Still edible, still good, but not my favorite. And, that's what the people like to know. They like to know that not everyone is going to get a home run swing on the first go. But at the very least, you're going to get some savings. And if you go to PowerSups and you use the code BDU at the online store, you will net yourself 15% off. So a few people have let me know that they have, purchased supplements using the code so far, which is much appreciated. So get out there, support PowerSups. They support us, and make sure you use that code BDU at the checkout.
Money will definitely be up after all these paid advertisements. I'll tell you that though.
Oh yeah, we are cooking with gas.
All right,
next grips, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're waiting on that sponsorship now. After we just gave them a very fat shout out for every single person's back day going forward from here. All right, Jack, this is you. How important is a protein shake after the gym, and what would be your post workout recommendation?
Oh, I love these broad questions.
And I want a specific item. I want the exact grammage per kilo of lean body mass as well.
Oh yeah, I would say a protein shake after the gym is not that important. If like depends when your next window of eating is going to be, but I would just say try and have your peri-workout window of 6 hours. So that's including your pre-workout and intra-workout if you want to have it, which is I think is helpful, but again not absolutely necessary. And then post-workout. So if you eat your pre-workout at 10, then you train at 12, then try and have your post-workout meal by 4 p.m. And I would say that that window becomes even more important if you are in a deficit compared to maintenance or a surplus. And yeah, so I mean, you can have a protein shake if you want, like if you really want to delve into that minutia, or if you know you won't be having a meal afterwards until a further time away. So with outside of that six-hour window, yeah, go and have a pre-workout shake. Sorry, post-workout shake. And in terms of post-workout in general, I think we talked about this recently, but again, depending on your calorie budget and macronutrient budget, I would try and have or bias protein and carbohydrates. And again, it's hard to say without delving into like, okay, what's if someone has 100 grams of carbs versus 500 grams of carbs, that's going to sort of differ my recommendation there. But I'll try and have around like 0.4 to 0.5 grams per kilo of body weight of protein. And then depending on your total carbohydrate target, like probably bias the pre and post workout window for carbohydrates and have to a lesser extent have carbohydrates distributed elsewhere.
Perfect. I think that would have nailed the listener's question on the head. So if they go catabolic post-training session, we know who to blame. It's Jack.
Yeah. Well, they've just misinterpreted what I've said. It can't be my fault, surely.
Yeah, oh, you wouldn't give out any false information, that's for sure. All right, the hardest muscle group to grow for all of us. What have you noticed the hardest muscle group to grow would be, Lawrence?
Oh,
it hasn't grown in 3 years, so I'm interested to hear what it could be.
Literally, the pictures, like, I look the same from 2020. I just have expanded the image within my own lounge room. So I've, like, detached
Joey, my body. Joe actually showed me the photos of 2017 when you first signed up, and he said there was no visual difference.
Yeah, I was like, I sent Joe my very first, like, day one progress pictures the other day, and he's like, dude, you look better than you do now. So and
the exact quote was, is he wearing Versa grips? Because I can definitely tell.
Oh, dear. No, I mean, it's no secret for me. My back has probably been the hardest thing to grow. I think that's pretty consistent. Like, a lot of people, you know, say like muscles that are on the posterior aspect of the body are potentially a little bit harder to grow. And I think there's probably some merit to that, you know, like you can't see it potentially. It's, you know, harder for the mind muscle connection, yada, yada. But I also just think that, you know, genetically some people are just not going to grow as favorable in some tissues compared to others. So I do think I've changed some things up this off season in terms of like volume and really prioritizing like the length and position, which at least from my visual, potentially sheer desperation eye, is maybe making some difference. Like I think there has been some tissue gain there, but it's so hard. Like once you get to this point, like sort of, can you squint and see it in the off season? Like it's only once you do get a little bit of body fat off that you really know whether or not a difference has been made. But yeah, that's probably all I have to say on that one, DY. Shock horror.
Yeah, would never have guessed it.
No.
What about you, Jack?
Probably for me would be chest. So I just find that my delts respond very well and my triceps respond very well. And I find that, I don't know if they take over a lot, but I think they do certainly grow a lot from the pressing that I do, even though that's not intended. And yeah, so chest is a bit more of a struggle. And I mean, it's definitely growing. So like I'm noticing change, but just not as fast as my back or my lower body or anything else. Yeah.
Mm. What about you, DC?
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar to Lawrence. You and I are in the same camp here. I have very high sets per muscle for back training at the moment. It's like 24, 25, somewhere around there. And I'm starting most of my upper body days with back training. So my chest volume, my delt volume is really on the back burner here. And it's almost like three back days a week. But it's working. I feel like my back is really becoming stronger in this off season. And I put up some physique photos a while back and I was pretty happy with how my progress is looking here. So I think I've found a real sweet spot with my training volumes at the moment where I'm recovering very well. And I'm seeing progress upon my lifts, and you know, I'm just having some really nice momentum behind us.
Mm. Yeah, those shots looked really good.
I would say that I'd be the exact same, but like even looking back at like my training programs previously, a very large majority of my upper body days, I would always have like my pressing movements first, and then followed by the back days. So like I kind of understand, like, you know, by the time you get around to your back movements after doing some heavy pressing, the back movements kind of take a hit, even though you might not think they take a hit. So I've done somewhat similar where I've swapped around the back movements before the pressing movements, and I have seen some really good benefits, but I'm not going to copy. I reckon it would have to be the calves, but I know exactly why the calves don't be growing as much as the other muscle groups. And in the end, they get put at a majority of the time at the back end of a leg day. And there's no way you're giving the same amount of effort to the calves as what you are to like the quads and so on like that, especially if they're dead last and only for 3 to 4 sets, maybe 2 to 3 times a week. So, you know, if I was to prioritize, if I did want to prioritize those a little bit more, you know, I would make some adjustments to the training program. But as of right now, no, we'll leave them there. Final question here, Jack, and this one's really specific to you. Thoughts on the ICN bikini judging criteria? What would you change? You know, I know that you got the real eye for,
right at the end.
I know you really got the eye for bikini. So, would you change anything about the ICN criteria?
I'm proficient across all the categories. Thanks very much. Mm,
exactly.
I mean, what I would say is just more consistency across all states specifically. Mm. So that it's an equal playing field, and similar to classic physique for males, like just ensure that they have a preset judging criteria for what they're looking posing wise, and then also what they're looking for in terms of conditioning, because there definitely has been some discrepancies between states for one, the posing, and two, how much conditioning they're looking for. And I can understand it's very confusing for girls, because they're trying to, maybe they're either coming across from a different state, or they're looking at different states and seeing the winners and trying to replicate that, and they don't get favored for it.
I think definitely in like the Western Australia shows as well, like the bikini girls come in quite lean, and I really do like their look. And then when you come over to some of the other shows, they then bias a softer look. I really do like Lindsay, who ended up winning the ICN overall for Victoria over the weekend. Very complete physique, a decent amount of muscle mass as well, but also a good level of conditioning. So I reckon that should be more or less like the national standard. She was also probably a little bit more conditioned than what you would normally see with some of the ICM bikini looks as well. I really liked it. And in regards to her proportions, she's very small. She's only, I believe, don't quote me on it, maybe 43, 44 kilos. So obviously a very small human. But like the proportions compared to her conditioning were like pretty much smack on what I would associate with a perfect bikini physique. So, you know, if that was able to be replicated somewhat and she was more or less like the poster girl for a majority of the other states, I think that would really set the bikini criteria up quite nicely.
Yeah, I'd also favor the slightly leaner look, because it still is quite far behind fitness, like both in terms of leanness and muscularity. And also, if they are bringing gym wear, which I'm not sure they are, but that's obviously going to be the even more entry-level category where, I mean, almost doesn't matter what your body fat is there if you're wearing active wear. So, yeah, game on.
Why'd you laugh when we said gym wear? Serious, Div, yeah.
Yeah, that was Lawrence, not me.
Yeah, yeah. Don't be laughing actually, about that line.
Yeah, no, my mic was on mute. I think that must have been picked up off DC's mic. Yeah.
Yeah. You're a prick, DC. Hey, man. Nah, and the thing is with the ICN bikini, you see a lot of the time with like they sometimes cross over the swimsuit, the conditioning standard. So if they were a slight little bit leaner, I think there'd be a little bit more of a gap between like that fitness, for example, and the bikini and the swimsuit. So I would like to see a little bit more bias towards like a little bit more conditioning and maybe a little bit more muscle mass and proportions like Lindsay, but just maybe a little bit taller. Other than that, I think it's pretty much spot on. Like you said, a judging criteria across all of the shows would also be quite nice as well. But that being said, when you roll up to a show, you got to pick the best of the bunch. And, you know, some shows might not be as competitive as like, you know, the Melbourne show or some of the Queensland shows and so on like that.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess, yeah, sorry, on that topic though, like similar to what IFBB does, like they have their judging criteria kind of regardless of who shows up. Is that correct? Like they, and maybe ICN should start doing more of that, so that it does become more consistent.
From what I know with the IPB is like you pretty much have the Olympia, the winner, and the closest person to the person that's won that Olympia this year, the closest person to that in regards to proportion, conditioning, muscle mass, and all the other little boxes pretty much wins. So, you know, whoever's winning the Olympia, if you look the closest to them, chances are you're going to win. Thank you, listeners, for listening once again. If you are after a shirt, drop us a DM on the BDU page and we'll get that all sorted for you. Thanks for listening.